You're listening to the GAA Hour with Diarmaid Ling on Sports Joe.
Hello, hello, and you're very welcome to the Hurling Show. Huge weekend of sport, huge weekend of hurling again. I am delighted to be joined in studio by James Ryle. James, good to have you back.
Thanks, Diarmaid.
Good stuff. And being beamed in from the south of Clare, almost Limerick. So we'll get a good insight from there as to what's happening. Derek Honan, great to have you, Derek.
Cheers, lads. Very much Clare, near Limerick, but very much Clare.
Yeah, you're keen to point that out. I mean, you must be happy enough, Derek, after the weekend, or is there huge room for improvement?
Yeah, absolutely. Delighted with how it went the weekend. A perfect start for Clare, really, and came in under the radar, but produced a really solid performance. So spirits are high in Clare at the moment.
Mm. James, what did you make of the Clare game?
Yeah, it was, I suppose, Tipperary were disappointing. Mm. That's probably the big take-home factor after a pretty decent start. I think the hopes in Tip were beginning to rise after Walsh Park display. But
is that selling Clare short, or is that a bigger takeaway in some respects? You know, we were saying it last week with after the Limerick-Cork game, like, there's a lot of focus on how bad Cork were. Clare had to play well, but Tipperary were ultimately were disappointing, like, weren't they?
They were disappointing, yeah, and I suppose they were very open as well, and they played a brand of hurling that maybe didn't overly suit Tipper. They tried to play it, and in that first half, just I said it at home that I could see goals, more goals, and that's what they done. Clare opened it up. Clare full forward line. The ball going in was very good, and Duggan full forward, massive player, hard to mark,
in just every sense
big
of the word,
in every
yeah.
way. Yeah. Mm.
So what were Tipperary trying to do that didn't suit them? Like, is it the Limerickification of hurling? Like, are they in the early stages of trying to play the game in the way that is now the most successful way of playing the game? That's where it's at. Everyone's trying to do what Limerick are doing, but they're just at a very early stage of it. Like,
maybe so, yeah. But if you take the Tipperary forwards, they're probably known for this whizzing ball, 30-20 yard ball from side to side from player, and I suppose that's kind of gone out to play a small bit, and that suits the John McGraths, and it suits the Tip style. And I suppose Ford, had a couple of chances of goals both in the Waterford game and in the Clare game. But it's just, they were so open defensively, I think, and they seemed to get pulled out the half back line. They were pulled out a small bit, and the Clare full forward line really exposed the full back line. But having said all that, if you were looking at young Morgan in the corner, you'd say he played well. You'd say Cottle Barrett was one of their best players.
Yeah.
You'd say Seamus Kennedy, wing back, probably handled Tony Kenny fairly well. So, or Tony Kelly. So it was hard to know, but I suppose the size of Duggan, you'd nearly want a telescopic loader to try and,
if you had one.
Well, yeah, like, when a guy like that is in front of you and he's got such a reach, such a claw out in front of him, there's no way to defend it. And that physicality and that size is massive in sport, let it be in any sport, but that size in hurling, if you're able to hurl and you have size, you've
Grod Hegarty, you've got that combination.
Size is massive.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely have a fella, a welter. It was the case for the two, without doubt. Derek, you had that in spades as well. What did Clare do to expose Tipperary's maybe naivety is a bit harsh, I'm not sure, but it certainly, they left themselves wide open, and that's fine if you're going to play that really intense. If you're very good and very experienced at that very intense hassling that we'll say Limerick are at, they can afford to leave that little bit of space. They still don't really do it, but they could maybe afford to do it in a more nuanced way. Is it like when it looks like they're going to lose possession or gain possession, they can then open that space up. But Clare still exposed that space and maybe used it more efficiently and effectively than Tipperary could, because Clare were left open at the back as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd agree with James. There was definitely, watching live, there was an awful lot of space in front of both of the forward line, to be honest. But the Clare delivery and the Clare use of that space and probably the movement of the inside forwards was that bit better to be able to exploit it. Ian Galvin and Mounsey, Tony, Shane, they were all really dynamic in their movement. And then with Peter, like he touched on already, his just pure size and power. He was like a one-man puck-out tactic, really. Like, there was nothing overly sophisticated in the long ones where you were just able to lump it down on top of him, and more often than not, good things came out of it.
It's so a good balance to have, though, isn't it? It's a good to have that option, because so much of the game now is the short puck out in the building from the back. But you can keep a half forward far more honest if he thinks he has to drop back, because you know the half forward line will always drop deep on a long puck out. And if the possibility is, you know, a cornerback needs to have the possibility of it going long to create that extra 5 yards from the corner forward, so he can take it out into that. So it's a good tactic to have, like.
Absolutely, and like Limerick are big on that, and they're obviously the standard bearer, where you'd have a short option, a medium option, and a long option, and you have to have the other two in order for your one to work, because you're, like you said, you have to keep everyone honest. And Clare were able to build from the back when they needed to, and they did so, I suppose, more so in the first half, to be honest, whereby they did build play through the lines when they had to, and they delivered a really good ball inside, and they were dangerous when they did. But I suppose then in the second half, maybe one thing to work on would be that they were a bit overly reliant on that longer puck out, and that they needed to build it through the lines, especially when Tipperary started to get a foothold in the game kind of early in the second half, and Tipperary started to expose those spaces in front of the Clare full back line. So yeah, you do absolutely need those three options.
When you're playing that amount in the middle third, there's so much happening in the middle third at the moment. It looked like the influence of Shane O'Donnell for at least two of the goals and 4 or 5 points, like the effectiveness of his pass and the speed of the movement and the quickness of his thinking. When it comes to a Limerick, how far off are Clare from being able to hold their own in the middle third to be able to make the most of what's going on inside?
Yeah, I mean, I think Limerick are a long ways ahead of everyone. With a full 15, I think they're 10 points better than anyone at the moment. But look, we're not playing Limerick this weekend, so we don't have to worry about them yet. Anyway, Clare have to worry about Cork and getting a win there. Obviously, Limerick are standard bearers and you'd like to get there. But, you know, Clare's focus has to be on Cork and getting a win and trying to get qualified out of this Munster group.
What about John Conlon at centre back? How do you feel he's doing there?
Yeah, I mean, like his recovery has been incredible. Really, incredible. Like John did his cruciate at 31, and you know, that could finish a lot of lads. But the shape he's got himself into and the work that he put in to get there has been incredible and a testament to himself. Personally, I see him as a forward, and you know, I've always said I would have him in the forwards rather than the backs. But I think he's adapted pretty well, and like the way he finished the game against Tip the last day, I think the last 15 minutes where he totally, you know, like we touched on it there earlier, where there was a bit of space in front of the Tip full forward line for the start of the second half to finish out the game. John and the half back line completely closed that down, and when there was ball being hit in, you know, they had bodies around, and John came out with ball after ball over the last 15, 20 minutes and set up scores and clinched the game, really. So he's adapted really well to it, in fairness to him.
Yeah, he really came into his own at that stage. Tipperary positives, James? Is there Tipperary positives, or is that just such a fall back from the week before where there was actually seemed to be a bit of belief?
It's always hard, I
they
suppose.
They put under pressure, like early in the second half, they got a bit of a run, like, but...
They did get the ball out, and I suppose the difference was the Clare half back line seemed to smother the play a little bit more in the second half than Tip did in the first half. And again, Clare got the run of them with the wind. I'd say they had the wind in the first half, and a few counties that had the wind this weekend seemed to get a bit of a lead up and put the game to bed in the first half. But, you know, Tip... I suppose they're beginning to blood a few younger players, and it doesn't take long for a county like Tipperary to bring those players through. And I was only thinking they won an under 21 in 18, and they won, I think, just went to 20 in 19. And I suppose those players are really only coming now, and maybe it is a year or two too late that, you know, you'd like to blend a few of them in over a couple of years. But I suppose with the likes of Paddy Maher, Brendan Maher, and a few more of them that have left, they're kind of trying to do it overnight, which is hard to do. But as I said, Morgan, Cottle Barrett, these lads hurled well in the corner. But when your two cornerbacks are hurling great, and we're talking about, it's, you know, you know,
it's like the referee. Like if there's nothing said about the referee, he's done well. It's like if you don't want to be saying your cornerbacks played well, really. Yeah, like, it means they were involved in a lot of play. Like
I was glimpsing that, but I think there might only have been 4 points from play from the Tip starting six forwards, compared to maybe Derek will tell me what it could be, 2-7 or so from the starting six forwards. And I know John McGrath left the field early. But look, in Tip's defence, injury has been a massive, and I think that's going to have a massive bearing on the entire championship, not just Tipperary. But
because of the intensity of the games,
the intensities and the games coming
like
so close,
coming so fast, yeah.
And you know, that's something that's, you know, it doesn't look to be bothering Limerick in some way, but it might yet. And that's, you know, Tip started, they had a few injuries before they started, and in losing two guys, you know, in the first half, just, you know, it was always going to be an impossible task for him in the second half.
I am always like Brian Lohan, like I don't know where to even start with Brian Lohan. Like he's such an influence on the whole game, like on all of us when we played. Like even though he was maybe just finishing up or had just finished or whatever stage, I mean you played against him plenty of times.
I'm not sure when he finished up.
When would he have finished, Derek?
I'd say it was around 05 or that, was it?
Five, yeah. Around that. So you three, I think you played the year.
We definitely played him in a semi final in Croke Park.
Yeah.
One year, but
we played in the quarter final as well. We played you in 05 in the quarter final. He gave us an awful trimming. But he was playing, yeah, he played that day. So as a player, like, it's incredible influence. As a manager, I feel like his career has been somewhat overshadowed by the chaos that's been in Clare from the outside looking in, and I have no interest in going into that chaos whatsoever. There's enough opinions on that elsewhere. But what does he bring? Like, what does Brian Lohan bring to, like, I can imagine his legacy bringing its own amount, but what else is he bringing that is now maybe that has Clare looking like it's early, but looking like they're headed in a very good direction?
Yeah, I mean, like I think the biggest thing with Brian is his absolute steely determination to win. Like, I worked with Brian for 1 year when I was in UL. I did my master's there, and he was the Fitzgibbon manager, and really enjoyed working with him for the year. I thought he was an excellent man manager. And
is he good crack? It's a good cry. Is that steely determination sometimes? Like you'd be looking for a bit of, I don't know, like, in, yeah.
It takes a while for him to warm up, but he is good crack when he wants to be, you know. And he's in the same profession as myself, so I'd meet him at a few different gigs at different times, but he is good crack. He's well able to have the crack, in fairness. But I think, you know, his will to win and his just pure steely determination is just, it oozes out of him, you know, when you're talking to him. And I'm sure, like, with Fitzgibbon, you know yourself, you wouldn't have too much exposure to training with the team and stuff like that when you're involved with the county. But I think, you know, he's done a really good job. There's been a lot of obstacles put in his way. And even, I suppose, the way he's taken that on and not accepted anything less than, you know, what he thinks should be in place for Clare Senior Hurling. Is a huge plus.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be paying dividends. The other to come into Limerick and to move on, John Kiely is, I find him a very funny character to look at on the sideline. Like, I feel like he's like a character of Father Ted or something. Like, I don't know, he's so in it. Yet when he does the interviews and when he speaks afterwards, and I mean, all of that stuff aside, and I don't mean that in any slight either, because I have huge respect for John Kiely, because not out of anything that he says or he does, but just by how his team plays, like, that's a man who knows what he's doing. He's a man who's organised, and he's getting the best out of a bunch of young fellas, which any man who's getting the best out of a bunch of young fellas, to my mind, is a good fella, like, you know. So what, it seems quite simple afterwards when you listen to him talking about the game, but it's not simple to do that. So what's he, how are they at this stage again? It looked like they were maybe going to get weaker, that they might, maybe the victories and the, you know, the celebrations or the years have just been on the road, but they're getting stronger. They seem to be getting, like, they're getting better, like, you know.
Yeah, he's, I suppose all those managers, first of all, respect, you know, and when you're talking about Brian Lohan, the first thing I'd say is that man carries some respect. And
for sure.
He also looks like a man, I'd say, that could cut you in two without ever raising his voice. You know, just, I'd say he'd be the same tone. And I'd say that, you've said, did he actually say that to me like that? You know, he's a direct character, I'd say. And all those, like, Kylie's a brilliant manager. And, you know, I think he's a massive piece to the whole Limerick, we'll say, call it however you like.
Unquestionably, yeah.
Like, you know, you take Jim Gavin and go back to Dublin in the football, I think the way he carried himself and even Cody in Kilkenny's style of things, they don't say a whole lot. They just say, they're not made for the media in the sense they'll just say that, oh, tough game and, you know, lucky here today and, you know, we knew it was going to be a big battle, and they say the same thing over and over again. And I often say about even Cody, he could nearly give the interview at the start of the year and you could just change the team as you go along, and just you could the same interview, it's the same, it doesn't matter if it's Westmead, Limerick, it's the same thing, you know. And
It is, I get that, it is, but it was very noticeable with Martin Fogarty when he took over the interviewing duties, I think when Brian Cody was sick a few years ago. And there was the very much the feeling that I got from his interviews was, I'm not telling you anything, and I'm going to pretend to be the old simple ignorant fella here. And that's all grand, and that's grand. But what I'm doing is I'm not telling you anything. But it was very clear to me that that was the relationship. There's a really interesting balance, I think, with Brian Cody in that, okay, maybe he's not saying anything in that he's not revealing tactics, or he's not revealing, you know, about someone getting dropped because they were in Thomastown on a Monday night or whatever it was. But he was revealing something very central to Kilkenny's success. He was coming out and saying every week or every couple of weeks in an interview, he was talking about the things that seemed to be the guiding principles by which he lived and that Kilkenny teams have had to live to since, which was the genuineness and the spirit of the camp. They were, and the honesty with the game. They were, he kept saying those things, and that is not, and everybody was kind of saying, well, oh, that's Brian Cody saying nothing again. But I think actually, had we all kind of listened to him at the start, and said, okay, well, actually, if we get those three things, or just take those three things, because how many dressing rooms were we all in, and you'd have honesty up on up on the door, and you'd be like, whoever put that sign up there, can you tell me about that? Can you tell me about that word? What do you know about it? What does the manager know about it? What do the players know about that word? That word is, like, you might need 2 weeks to try and sort that word out in your head based on your actions, how you carry yourself, how you behave in relation to the game. So Cody was talking about those things at the start, and they were, I know there are nuances to the game and there are tactics and all that stuff, but they were three of, when I think about JJ, when I think about Tommy, when I think about, you know, Eddie and all the great players that you had, and yourself as well, there was they were the guiding principles, and he was telling them very openly. So it wasn't just, I'm gonna bullshit my mate through this and not tell him anything. He was telling something.
Yeah,
like,
they're kind of core values, if you like. And I suppose he said the same thing day in, day out, and I suppose he had that respect as well, what those managers have, but it was his consistency, I think, maybe, and that's what makes good managers, that they're consistent from the start of the league right through to the end of the championship.
Consistent in what context? In how they hold themselves as people?
Yes.
Or as how they, like, in how they interact, or what's, where?
I would say consistency as a person. And you know, we know the performances, and they're there for themselves, but the consistency to be able to say the same thing before a game, the consistency maybe you want to say something, but they don't say it, and they don't create, like, do you know, one of the things I hate is when you hear someone say that day we sat down and we decided that we were going to win the All-Ireland, you know. And I often say,
we had the Jaffa Cakes and we had a cup of tea.
You know, we were beaten that day and we got together in a dressing room and said, why didn't you say that at the start of the year? You know, that's a fairly valid point. You know, why was it that day? And if it's that simple, then why doesn't everyone sit down and say, do you know what, we're going to win the All-Ireland this year? Do you know, so there's no stories about, like, I'm sure Brian Cody has had cups of tea with players and had Jaffa Cakes and had, you know, brought the whole thing together. But there's no stories about what they'd done or the way they trained. It's just a constant year after year. Yeah, we put the best team out there. We've done our best. And look, we got the result, and the scoreboard only matters when the game is over. That was
another gem.
You know how a Brian Cody one. And it's so true, like, but there was no insights into how it was done. And that filters down, I think, through the players as well. And, you know,
and James, when you were playing those games and you were winning by, you know, you were winning by 18, 19 points, and the interview would be done afterwards and you'd say, oh, we knew we were going to get a tough game today. Was that the way you felt inside? Was it ever a commented, geez, that was a handy one? Or was it just were you just not allowed to think like that?
I love this question because I always wondered, Derek, I always wondered why Kilkenny gave Wexford so much respect, and I hated the fact that they did, because if they didn't, I felt we might have snuck one or two more, we might have had an opportunity. But actually, like, I felt that from all of the, I had a couple of occasions with a couple of players where it wasn't the case, but that was outside of the game. But afterwards and during my career of getting regularly between 10 and 20 point beatings, he treated the start of a Wexford game as if, like, you know, we could beat you. And I was like, why are they doing this? Like, why wouldn't you just be, why wouldn't you be taking the foot off the pedal or something? Yeah. But you didn't, because he held this line, you know.
Well, we honestly thought you could beat us. And that, well, you know, I don't know. Like, there was a bunch, there was kind of, I suppose, I remember when I first went into the Kilkenny dressing room, I remember DJ Carey came over, it was 02, and he just shook my hand, hi, I'm DJ Carey. And I looked at, you know, I haven't been living under a stone, you know. So you'll get to see how players carry themselves, and younger players coming in, if they see, do you know, you know, the likes of a JJ today, and I have great time for JJ because I think he's definitely in my, you know, in, I suppose, one of the best hurlers. You know, I'd always name JJ as the best hurler I've ever seen, or there was no big airs and graces about him. He was brilliant the whole time. He was brilliant every training session. He was brilliant at every club game with Johnstone. He was brilliant with every kick. You know, he was consistently, even the best players have ended up, you know, having poor days or a league performance off, but you know, I don't think you could count any day when JJ didn't turn up and perform. And but, you know, he could walk into a shop nearly with a hoodie up and just doesn't want to be seen, like, you know. So if you're a younger player going in there, you see that, I know that word culture that's being branded around, but
in the real sense of it, it's like the word has been hijacked into this sports psychology, the creation of a culture, and this is how we go out and we pick up the rubbish after whatever, like the different things people do to, if we do this, we will have a good culture. But someone like JJ just lived it. Like, he wasn't doing it out of choice. He didn't make a decision to do this. Like, I remember we played against you in Wexford Park one year in the league, and I started wing back and got taken off and then got put on full forward, and it was just ridiculous stuff. But I was on JJ and a high ball came in and I was having a bad day and I pulled kind of late and a little bit to the side and nearly caught JJ. And I knew him well enough off the field because he had spent a bit of time down in Pierce's Town, and he just looked at me like, and it was a little bit like you were saying with Cody or you know, with John Kiley or whoever it was, like Lohan. He just looked at me and what he was saying to me was, that stroke wasn't in the spirit of the game. Don't do it again.
Yeah.
I don't know what he would have done, and I didn't pull again that way to find out, but I agreed with him. It wasn't the way I want to play the game either. And when I reflected on it afterwards, like, you know, years later, I was like, it's a fine line. Like, it's a fine line to carry into the game. You know, I don't know. I suppose I just respect that in a fella like that. And I loved Cody that he always said that, you know, how you play the game matters to the game. It's not just you winning. It's like,
there are probably some of those, the likes of Kylie and, you know, Cody and these guys, they know when to ramp it up, and they know when to have the serious conversation and when not to have the serious conversation. So, do you know, there's a time when, let's say you played a game and the performance wasn't good in the league or the thing was down, Cody could walk into a dressing room after and just say, training Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, and walk out again. And that was enough to go, oh no. Like, you know what I mean? That simple statement, you know, you kind of knew, Tuesday night's going to be horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you knew yourself the performance wasn't good. And they were able to do that, so he was able to just go nice and easy through the league, and eventually then there'd come a pinch where he'd say, you know, you'd get that hairdryer moment maybe where he'd, you know. And but if you have to do that from day one in a Walsh Cup game, and you're trying to continuously do the same thing right through the Walsh Cup, through the league, through the championship, and expect then to get the same result every single time, you know. So he knew when to, I suppose, when to get serious.
Yeah, and you have to have the calmness for the hairdryer to work. You can't just turn that on all the time. It doesn't work. Like, I felt that with Davy Fitz a little bit with Wexford. Like, sometimes it was like the entrenched kind of war mentality all the time. It just jades the system. Like, I don't think it's a thing if someone just gets tired of it or it doesn't work. It's just like, it jades the system of the bodies who are having to listen to it. Now, I wasn't in the dressing room with Davy Fitzgerald, so I don't know, but that's just the sense I had from the outside. Derek, just on the game, one of the things that I noticed coming into the game or coming off the back of the league was that Waterford were being lauded for their strength and depth. And now we look at maybe four, if not five, big injuries for Limerick, and even in the game itself, we've Kyle Hayes, so much talking about Kyle Hayes, and then Cian Lynch goes after 9 minutes, but didn't seem to bother him too much. On the other side, Ira Daly got injured. They seemed to have some way. They were, you know, Gillan was, he was doing fine on Gillan, and Prunty was out of position, but he was doing fine out on Garon Hegarty as well. And all of a sudden, Ira Daly was gone. Prunty shifted back in, and both Gillan, because I don't think he suits Gillan very much, he came into the game hugely, and Gerard Hegarty's influence grew in the game as well. So strength and depth is fine at a particular standard, but like, do Waterford have enough strength and depth in terms of quality to push on against Limerick, because that's what they have to be thinking about?
There's been a huge amount made of the Waterford strength and depth, like, and They do have good players there, there's no doubt about that. But I know people are probably going to have to reevaluate slightly maybe how much they talked up Waterford in the run-up to the championship. I thought, you know, in terms of the strength and depth against Limerick last day, they were forced into a change when Barron came on and then Jamie came on after 50 minutes. So they used two subs in the first 50 minutes. And they used their last three subs from 67 minutes onward, 67, 68 and 71st minute. That's when they used their last three subs. So, you know, I suppose the idea of having strength and depth, and you'd see it with the Dublin footballers over the years, whereby they'd bring on, you know, the likes of Kevin McMenamin for the last 20 minutes, and they'd bring on whoever else for the last 20 minutes, and they'd give them, it's like a fresh player coming onto the field who's as good as the player coming off, and you're finishing really, really strongly. So I do agree that those players that came on are good, but maybe the use of them wasn't as good as it could have been, because if they were given 20, 25 minutes to impact the game, they might have made a bigger impact on it. But
they're the mistakes you make in his evolution as a manager, or is this a consistent problem for him?
Well, I'm not sure if it's a consistent problem, to be honest, but it's just something that I noticed last weekend. And I definitely think, you know, the likes of Park Manny, who would have led Ballygunner to obviously the All-Ireland club title, he would have, you know, you'd expect him to be playing more than injury time 2 minutes at the end of the game. So I do think it's probably an area where they could look at getting those lads onto the field earlier and seeing can they impact it that way. But in all honesty, I think, you know, no one really compares to Limerick's strength and depth at the moment. When you're missing Peter Casey in All-Star, James Flanagan in All-Star, Kyle Hayes, in my opinion, is their best player. Keane Lynch, one of their best players as well. So and still go on and win by four, and in reality should have won by more, you know. I think there was probably it looked to me like an 8 or 9 point win, really. You know, they missed the last four scoring chances, which was very uncharacteristic. And even the two goals kind of came, you know, probably against the run of play. So they are just depressingly, you know, for all of us who are trying to compete with them, or all of those who are living near them, they are just very far ahead at the moment.
Yeah, they are. Liam Cahill, it can be hard to gauge it, the Munster phenomenon, and because the structure of the game has changed recently, I suppose, like, if Waterford are to take themselves as the main challengers to Limerick, we put Limerick at number one. I think everybody has Limerick at number one, certainly after the weekend, there's no doubt about it. Waterford have to be looking at themselves as serious challengers. The likelihood now is, barring a significant shift, that Waterford will play Limerick in a Munster final. And the possibility then is, and I mean, obviously there'll be, you know, Kilkenny will have a say in this, and probably maybe Galway might have a say in it. They may be playing them in the Ireland final. Are you too, seems like a criticism, but are you too proud to let go of a Munster championship in the hope of winning an All-Ireland? On the basis that, and I know it's maybe a simplistic idea, but if when you get bet, often you learn so much in being beaten that you learn how to turn things around. Like, would you let go of a Munster for an All Ireland if that was the possibility, or is there any danger? Is it just Waterford going to go, maybe take the Kilkenny attitude, you just win every single game that you can by as much as you can?
I don't think Waterford have the luxury of thinking anywhere close to that, you know. Waterford might be seen by some people, seen by a lot of people by the sounds of it, as the number one contender to Limerick. But I think, you know, the way I see it is Limerick are one, and there's four or five teams there that are around the same level. And Waterford need to concentrate on getting out of that pack before they think about an All-Ireland or whatever.
Who are you putting there? So Clare? When you put yourselves there,
I'd have Clare, Cork. I'd have Clare, Waterford, Cork, although I drop Cork maybe to the lower end of it at the moment.
Yeah.
And Kilkenny and Galway. That's who I'd see, you know, and I wouldn't see, I think any of those teams could beat each other on any day. I definitely don't see it as a clear cut Waterford or second best team in Ireland. I'm kind of a bit bemused by that commentary nearly even, to be honest. So obviously, look, the way you've posed it there, would you sacrifice a Munster for All-Ireland? You would. But Waterford cannot be thinking like that. You know, they do not have that luxury.
Is it a possibility that they'll take a knock that's going to set them back at the weekend? Like, is it an opportunity for the likes of Clare to come in and take the second Munster final spot?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's still an opportunity for Clare and Cork to qualify for that Munster final. You know, Cork lost to Limerick, which I think Limerick are going to win all their games. Clare did their job so far in beating Tip. Waterford beat Tip. So look, this weekend's game will tell an awful lot between Clare and Cork. And while I think Cork have probably had a couple of bad performances in a row and it may have taken a mental toll, Cork, you know, probably have a bit of a hoodoo over Clare over recent years. And we had a great game with them last year in the Gaelic grounds, and a great save at the end of the game when Patrick Collins won it, but there was nothing between the teams. I'd be hoping from a Clare point of view, you're adding in Peter Duggan, you're adding in Shane O'Donnell and Robin Mounsey, a couple of new players that have established themselves that could, you know, see Clare edge it, but there's nothing between those teams, you know.
What do you reckon?
Well,
James, are we bigging up Waterford unnecessarily, do you think Clare, Cork is that?
But in the grand scheme of it, I don't think Waterford can be too disappointed. I know they want to win every game they play, but if they potentially could meet in the Munster final and potentially Dinn could meet in an All Ireland final, surely we'll say the game at the weekend was the one to lose. You know, the last thing you want is to be beaten Limerick in some ways and be one for one and give Limerick an edge over you. It's the last thing you want as a team. So, you know, winning a Munster final, obviously, if there's a flick of a coin and you can decide where you go, but I don't think they can be too disappointed if they can get the results to get back into the Munster final. And the Munster final is the time to try and take him out. Easier said than done, but I'll go back to the injuries. The injuries are massive and they're mounting, and they're hamstrings as well with the two guys. And like, I know myself, it's the one injury I do understand is a hamstring. Like, you know, you're definitely talking 4 weeks, if not more. And, you know, there'll be a lot of hurling over the next 4 weeks. And it's, you know, if you have a broken finger, you can come back, you can strap it, you can do something. But a hamstring, there's a fear there.
It's impossible to get a turning sprint and be comfortable in it, isn't it?
No one can tell you straight up you're 100% there, and you're nervous yourself. So, like, do you go hell for leather in the week before the game you're trying to come back? I don't think you do. I think you hold off to that 80% and you wait until the game. And
a little bit untested then.
That's not the way to be going into a game. And I understand they have a big back, you know, they have a lot of backup, they have a great panel. But every time your Lynches and your Hayeses and your Flanagans can't play, do you know, you're trying, there's more new guys coming in, and Cottle O'Neill came on look, he was very good.
The confidence him to take on, I don't think he got seven shots, three or four points, three or four wides.
Did, and I think the last one he got was actually probably the one he probably nearly shouldn't have took on. It was the hardest one he got. But they can't keep bringing lads away. Well, I hope they can.
You'd imagine they can't
keep pulling them out. And, you know, experience is a massive thing too. And, you know, those guys have it, the existing guys. But every time there's an injury there and hamstrings are, they can be slow to come back from. So it is one worry that Limerick may have.
Yeah.
And the face of it there, like, I'd agree with you, James. But I suppose from the point of view where you've Kyle Hayes out, you've Flanagan, Casey, okay, they're out, Casey's out a bit longer term, and you've Lynch gone at the start of the game, and you kind of got two goals there that maybe were a bit against the run of the play. I think it probably has to be a bit of a mental blow to Waterford that they didn't get over the line. On the face of it, a 3-point loss to Limerick in Limerick isn't the worst thing, especially in a group game where, you know, you're likely to play them again. But is that going to take a toll, the fact that there was lads missing and they still couldn't get over the line, you know?
Yeah, maybe so. And I suppose Waterford, you know, they're in a position now where I suppose it's all or nothing when the time comes. And if they do meet him in a Munster final, it sounds a bit stupid, but I don't know, are they literally too physical? You know, they're trying to really hop off him. And that's, you know, I know you can't really go around them and you have to be physical, but there's a time and a place to be, you know, horsing and jumping and tacking, and they seem to, they can stay with him for X amount of time, and then it seems to kind of, the wheels come off a small bit, and Limerick just kind of, they ride the storm, they get over it, you know, they get a few points on the board, and you know, they're probably better to put the, that physicality into the hurling more so. And I know it's a strange one to say don't be as physical, but if you keep running into lads and hopping off them, there's only so much.
It's a hard balance. Like, I mean, I think last year, the year before, was it when they played Limerick, they went almost full physical, thinking that was the thing to do, and this seemed to be a little bit more of a measured approach. But you think maybe even more measured?
Well,
again,
I think up to the water break last year, and I can just remember looking at the time, the hits that went in were absolutely, and I know you have to, but you know, it's easier to hit a lad when you have the ball in your hand. You know, it's also easier to try and play the ball out of a lad's hand. He has to play it, take four steps to hook and to block and challenge the ball, attack the ball, knock the ball out of their hand. But if you're trying to run into Hegarty and Burns all day long and try and do that for 70 minutes and hurl on top of it, it can be hard to do. So I don't understand the point I'm getting at. It's not, you know, I'm
just
not
a
saying
a finer balance. It's a finer balance.
It's going out and being massively physical with physical guys isn't always the answer. And there's, if they change that tact a small bit and focus a little bit more on their own hurling maybe through that period, you know, quite possibly they might get better returns.
Derek, I felt there was a Wexford man who I felt for a little bit going down to Clare this week. I know he mightn't have been the most welcome man in the banner, but I thought, we were just chatting about it before, the referees, like James Owens, I thought the game is getting more difficult to referee all the time. I thought James Owens, Sean Stack, I mean, trying to measure the hand pass, trying to stay up with the play on what's happening inside. Tackling is gone. I mean, the intensity of tackling is incredible, and these are all very fine decisions, and players are trying to win frees at times, and it's all, you know, it's tough going. But I thought I would have said in all three games, actually, Fergal Horgan in the third game, I thought the referees let it flow as a basis. You can make mistakes, and there was mistakes made, and that's fine, but the players all made mistakes too. But as a basis, there was a good flow to each of the games. Maybe Limerick might be a little bit critical of that, but other than that, I thought there was a good flow to the referees the weekend.
I'd agree with you, yeah. We probably had our back up in Clare about James Owens getting the tip game after what happened last year, you know, with the penalty decision that I still feel was...
I can't see that one changing.
But I did think, no complaints on that. I thought he had a good game, and I'd agree with your sentiment in general. I thought the refereeing was pretty good. The hand passing issue is a huge issue because it's literally it's unreferable, you know. It's just unenforceable, the rule as is at the moment. And you know, there was a lot of examples of throws over the last few weeks, and they're highlighted on the TV at the time, and it's as clear as day as a throw, yet you still have lads arguing that it's a hand pass. And
I thought Sean Stack was brave in the Limerick game, with Limerick in particular. Like, he seemed like a young fella when looking at the television. Like, he seemed very young, you know, and he was going against, you know, Hegarty or any of the top fellas. Like, he was well able to stand his ground. I thought it was good.
I think Sean's developing into a really, really good referee. Like, he's going to be one of the top referees. But I think you need a rule change on that hand pass because it's just unenforceable. And I think having to switch hands when you're passing the ball, I think that's the only way where it's actually okay. I can see he clearly switched hands. That's pass at the moment. It's just you cannot ref it.
Or straight from the hurl.
Yeah,
well, you should be able to train it out of lads as well. You know. But
you're training it into him, aren't you? You're training into him to get the least bit of contact. Like, since the zone of contact is intensified so much, you have to get this flick
but
of a pass.
If you're continuously doing it and getting caught though, and when you come to a training, you should be made
I think
that
it was in the Clare game. I don't know, was it a tactic that they had, but there seemed to be a finish of a bit of an open hand. There was a couple of times with a few of the hand passes, and it looked like actually something that might have been trained, that they were trying to give a clear distinction that the hand was open. It wasn't like if it's in the fist or the ball wrapped around and it stays, because the hand pass almost works that shape, it rolls down off the hand and you can kind of give it that, but the fist never changes. But this seemed to be a bit of an open pass. I don't know, was it a thing? It's something I noticed.
I won't change the subject small bit on the ref, but the free that's kind of annoying me the most now is the person who's winning the free when they're coming out, and some guys are just standing up to him, and you know, it's I don't know what the ref can do in that. He's either going to blow the man for over carrying or give a lad a free. But if you stand your ground and you hold him up, and it happened Peter Duggan, I think, a couple of times where you could see he was frustrated and all he was doing was standing up. And when you have the likes of a Barrett coming out and he's elbowing and he's shouldering and he's, you know, lads are looking like they're getting fouled, and
that's the key to it, isn't it? Is if your elbows and shoulders are going, like
there's lads holding the horn behind their back, even have players with their hands in the air going, look, I'm not touching them, and you know, you're just hurled as if it's magically stuck to their back or something, and there's frees being given for that. And I think you know, it's a hard one again, because the physicality, some lads can just stand there and a lad can just bounce off them, and you're either going to start overturning it in and giving, you know, over carrying frees, or you're giving the free out. But again, going back to what I was saying last week, the benefit probably has to go to the guy with the ball in his hand,
which is probably what's happening. Derek, did you watch Wexford Dublin?
I did, yeah, I did.
Have you any hope for the Slaney Siders, or is it
I was blown away by the quality there, to be honest. I thought it wasn't a great game.
I wasn't either, don't worry.
It wasn't a brilliant game. I thought Wexford similar performance to Galway, and I thought that they were going to, you know, the crowd got behind them. They started getting momentum towards the end of the game. I thought they were going to put it out of the fire again. But they just didn't manage to do it this time. But they're probably, you know, they'll be kicking themselves because they waited so long to start hurling.
That's the same last week. Like, what if that's the most frustrating thing? It's the greatest. That's the point of the game, and it's the point of where Wexford are at the moment. If you have it in you, why are you waiting for the last 10 minutes to get it out of you? Like, what's stopping the other 60 minutes? It's really frustrating.
Yeah, it was real. Like, the play was very broken. It was all in the middle third. There was, you know, it was very physical. In fairness, now it was very physical. I would say that for both teams, they tackled hard and they tackled well. But you know, neither team got a really good flow in terms of actual attacking play. There was some great performances on the Dublin side. You know, Donald Burke had a huge game, and like he's turned into some player. But from a Wexford point of view, I would have thought my thing would have been, you know, Conor McDonald and Rory Connor inside are really have the potential to be an excellent full forward line. And they did some really good things, but it's just they didn't develop enough play for them. They didn't create enough attacking options or hit enough good ball in that they could really make hay inside, you know. And maybe that's
if the goal had gone in, that's like, you know, you've got something forming there between them, and that's like you see a direct result. It's like, okay, get it into him more. That's working, you know. That'll be subconsciously going on in the fellas outside, because it's all happening fairly subtly. You're trying to play the game plan, but you see something working. You're like, okay, let's do that again, you know. Like it should be working that way. Like
I suppose one thing about Wexford Park is there's always a whip and wind down there, like you'll know yourself.
There is,
That means then that if I'm playing with the wind, I can score from, you know, 30, 40 yards from my own goal. Whereas if I'm in Turles, you know, and I'm 30 or 40 yards from my own goal, I'm going to be hitting it in to the full forward line. So it doesn't probably lend itself to play on the inside line, unfortunately, for Wexford, because I thought that was probably their strongest line on the field.
It's such fine lines, though, isn't it? We say if McDonald's goal, the penalty miss, you know, a couple of small little things, you know, there wasn't much in that game. And just, you know, Wexford now are away from home for three games. You know, they've played the two of them at home, and 1 point when you would think Wexford Park is a place that's very hard to go to.
Yeah.
It's a disappointing start, yeah. There's no point in saying it.
There's a couple of things on that, but there's one thing that I wanted to read out to you first. It's on we don't have a little hand strap yet, so I just have it on the table. Have Wexford ever had an 8 out of 10 free taker? That's the question. I'm assuming that's Niall. Have Wexford ever had an 8 out of 10 free taker?
Weren't you a free taker?
I felt it was a little bit harsh when I read it. Like, I don't know. But I didn't think I was the one. I wasn't an 8 out of 10 free taker, but Paul Codd was a good free taker. And
Paul Codd was, absolutely.
Yeah. Paul had a thing with, I just see this strange thing with the county board, and I don't know, I suppose it was at a time where we were battling for trying to get, I don't know, boots or gear bags. You know, you'd always get coming up to the championship or something, you'd be getting the boots then, you'd be after playing like all year. And he went through a bit of a period of a bit of hostility with the county board, and he'd be taking frees in Wexford Park, like, and every single ball he'd hit by, oh, down as it landed on the main street, like, could be a 21 and it'd be gone out over. But in fairness to him, like, he was a top class free taker, like.
But why? The thing I can't understand is Chin. Why aren't they starting him?
Would he be on the freeze if he'd have started? Like, yeah.
You know, if you're good enough to come on the second half, if he's supposed to be the marquee player, which he is, you know, I would be starting him. It's like going back to Watford and starting Austin Gleeson. And I was surprised when the team was named that they didn't have him named and said, you have to start him if you want to go win it. But, you know, if you can come on, I don't know what the injury is, and maybe I should know, but, you know,
maybe I should too, but
if you last half the game, you know, surely maybe just start the game, try and get, you know, try and kick off. But coming on and coming with a big run at the end, and they were blessed to get the draw, we'll say, against Galway.
Beyond blessed, yeah.
You know, I'm maybe unlucky not to get something. Liam Ryan came up the field near the end and he probably should have.
Yeah.
You know, but then again, it's like, your full back coming up the field as well.
It is, but he's a leader and he's an elder statesman of the team now, and he gave it to a young fella, like, you know, and like, no disrespect to Pepper, like, but if I have somebody coming up, like, I mean, you wreck his wing back, he scored 3 amazing points, like, he just kind of went for it. And Liam Ryan, I'd be putting my house on, not because of his accuracy or not because of his capability to shoot, but because he's Liam Ryan. Like, you know, some fellas have the capability to shape a game. They're so good, I think they have the capability. It's nothing to do with, it's like the wing back who gives the inspirational point, like, you know, he's not always expecting it, but he just gives it. It's the exact thing, the energy the game needs at that time, and he just kind of steps into the role and does it. And Liam Ryan kind of refused the call a bit, and I was like, Jesus, Liam, like, that's in it's him. Just, like,
I'm taking a clear, or was it Donal O'Donnell, was it, up the cornerbacks, taking the ball over to draw in All Ireland? So, you know, it's he should have probably taken it on, to be fair.
It
looked like he gave me a score, like, you know, I'd say he had
Donal Donovan, wasn't it?
It was Donovan, yeah, I was correct, yeah. He wouldn't be happy with that name, but anyway, it was a gimme of a score for Ryan the other day. Like, I mean, he dwindled his back and he had a free shot. The fella he passed it off to had no angle really for a score and wound up getting dispossessed, but. My own feeling on it was, you know, he had the Sutcliffe had the epic block down on him before that, and maybe Liam's confidence was a little bit shaken after that. That, you know, maybe he felt like he took too long to hit it or whatever, and he didn't feel confident enough to take on the shot as a result. But it was, you know, it was an opportunity, and I would have expected, like, Liam's a very good player, so I would expect him to score that, you know, if he had taken it on.
Yeah, I'd have huge time for him, and always have. I just thought he's commanded that role, and he stepped into a kind of a Dara Ryan like kind of a character and full back, and it's not too often you get fellas of that. You know, they've the height and they've got the capability and they've got the speed, but they're intelligent as well, and then they also have this ability. I always thought this with Dara Ryan, like, it was almost like referees were afraid to give a free against him. Like, it was like he'd foul, but he'd get away with it, where somebody else, if they did the very same thing, wouldn't. There was something just quite uncompromising about him that everyone just kind of said, well, that's Dara doing what Dara does, you know. So I love Liam Ryan as a player, but I was hoping for a little bit more. One of the things now in Leinster is the draw, how important the drawn game is, because at the end now, in the last game, Wexford will go to Kilkenny, and the possibility is, so I suppose the whole thing in some respects is riding on the Galway-Kilkenny game, because if Galway beat Kilkenny and they win all their games up to that, Galway won't need the win as badly, maybe, however that manifests itself, I'm not sure, but that's the possibility. And if Kilkenny win all their games, they won't even have a draw. If they win all their games, they'll be taking Wexford, and okay, you win every game and all of that, but there is some part of you that says, right, this has been relentless, let's take a breather, and that opens the door to Wexford. That's the possibility.
Leinster is going to come down to the last day, I think, without a doubt, whereas maybe Munster won't. I think it's Wexford, Kilkenny, Dublin, Galway in the last day, and it's the one anomaly with this whole round robin, that you could have a scenario where one team doesn't have to win, and if that team doesn't have to win, and you could have another team fighting for their life. So the draw that happened below in Wexford Park, that point, it could be so valuable for either Galway or Wexford, or it could be the loss of the point that could, you know, there's so much, there's going to be so much riding on that. So next weekend, Pier Stadium, Kilkenny Galway, that's, you know, that's going to decide a lot, and I'm already looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Packing me bags and heading
up for the weekend. Will you go up to it, will you?
I will.
will you meet up with any of the boys? Derek Hardy, you were in college up there, weren't you?
I'm brutally keeping contact with people, so there's a few of us from home going to tip up, and it's a 2 o'clock Sunday, it's a bank holiday weekend, and we're going to go up and head to Salt Hill and hope we can get a victory in it.
After the weekend, I mean, Laois, it was a bit of a turkey shoot.
Kilkenny looked good, to be fair, and it's still hard to know. We won't really know where Kilkenny are, but, you know, I've said it since I've heard this draw on Salt Hill that I think Kilkenny, and at that stage I didn't know how to be
going. I'm going there for the weekend. That's the first thing you said.
The second thing I said is I think Kilkenny will win in Pier Stadium. And I've said that just the whole Cody Shefflin thing, and I just think, and Kilkenny people have massive respect for the likes of Henry Shefflin, and obviously so.
For sure.
But you'll still want, everyone in Kilkenny will want to go beat Galway, I think, for that reason, just to kind of say, ah, look, well done, but hard luck, and you haven't gone well, Henry. But, you know, I'm not sure are Galway going to come to the table with any more reasons to go beat Kilkenny, but you talk about the psychology of it, but absolutely everyone going to Galway will want to get a win because of the Henry thing. You want to, and you could have three or four Ballyhale Shamrock lads playing, do you know, and they're looking at their club man on the sideline, and I think everyone is going to raise their game that little bit, and it's in Pier Stadium. I think the pressure is on Galway a small bit, and I think Kilkenny will perform. And look, if you get a performance, they'll be thereabouts. Yeah. Mm.
Derek, looking in from the Munster side of it, everything is very balanced. In Leinster, looking at Laois and Westmead, where the commentary has become about score difference, essentially, like, you know, to be blunt about it, and that's, like, we've all seen the capabilities of both teams and the quality players that they have, but that's in essence what it's become about. It's very hard to put yourself in their shoes. I mean, I don't find it particularly difficult in some respects because we were getting beaten by 15 and 20 points by E-fellas, but is it good? At what point is it good for development, and at what point is it kind of, do you say, if you're in a county like Westmead after working as hard as they have had to work to get to where they're at, to then say, right, I need to hold on to 12 to 15 of these fellas at a time where America or Australia or somewhere else might seem like a better thing to do with their time? Like, that's what it really comes down to, maybe, when if you feel you're too far behind in relation to the amount of effort that it actually takes, because they do have to put in the same effort as everybody else. So where do you see that balance? And it's not a right or a wrong thing, it's just a kind of a balance.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not good for Westmead or Laois's development to get those hammerings. It just isn't. And it is much better for them to be playing, you know, for Westmead over the last couple of years, and they won John McDonagh last year. That is good for their run. That has improved them. But the prize then is to come up and play Liam McCarthy, which, you know, they're not at that standard yet. And, you know, it's very, very hard to get there. Like, it's just, I don't know what it is about hurling, but it's probably easier for a football team to rise up through the ranks. But whatever it is about hurling, just, you know, it's very, very hard to make that breakthrough to actually get up to the level of Wexford, Galway, Kilkenny, you know, for those that's to get up there. So those hammerings will do them no good. Like you're saying there, if you're involved in the panel and you're working and you're training since November, December in really, you know, trying conditions at times, and you're going out there and you're getting that beating, you know, you're bound to get fed up with it. And an offer of a few grand to play over in the States will become very enticing. But lads want to see their own counties do well too, and that will drive them on. And there's some really good players there that work, like, really hard on it. But it's a hard one to answer in terms of how to get them up to that level, you know.
Yeah.
Seeing the Westmead manager afterwards was saying it was a really tough loss. It shows them where they need to get to. But, like, you know, you could be saying that for the last 15, 20 years. But it's just a case of how to actually achieve that. And I don't think anyone has that answer at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, you could be saying for 100 years in some respects. It's like, so what, like, Don Logue was talking about investment, like that large scale investment, and that's not to say throwing money at the problem solves it, but by putting particular structures in place that maybe have worked elsewhere, and by actually committing real funds on the ground as a 10-15 year development, like, what would the hurling landscape be like if if Laois were much stronger, if Offaly were much stronger, if Westmead were much stronger, if Antrim and Laois, or Antrim and Offaly, are talking about just bringing them back to where they were in some respects, but pushing them on as well, that they can actually compete. Like, if we had, like, are we growing as a game if Limerick are bringing the game on and the same two, three teams are contesting them, and every now and then a Wexford comes up or a Waterford comes up or whatever? Should we be taking that a little bit more seriously, is to say, well, okay, that's fine there, but we're also going to plough as much as we can here to bring, to have 14 teams who can play at senior level, to have 15, should that be a goal, to have 16 teams who can play senior hurling in 20 years time? And can we make that investment now? Should that be like a bit more essential, well, or is the hurling landscape the way it is?
Well,
by nature
it is by nature in some way, but you can definitely develop it underage. You have to go back to the schools, I think, and that's where the money needs to be pumped in, to get it into the schools. But you know, the unfortunate thing, like Laois came down to Kilkenny, down to Nolan Park, and Kilkenny are trying to get their team ready to go play, we'll say, Galway, and then go play Dublin at Parnell Park. So everyone is trying to perform to the best of their ability to try and make that starting 15. So you're coming down, it's a no-win situation, and then because of the scoring difference, you know. But if you went to the week previous above in Mullingar, Kilkenny struggled for long periods against Westmead.
Yeah.
Westmead went 10-6 ahead. And, you know, at half time, by the time the second half started, Kilkenny had two subs brought on, and both of them were, you know, they were out of design. They had to be done. And, you know, they kicked on and got a few goals at the end. And you would say, coming out of there, God, Westmead definitely put it up to Kilkenny. Laois put it up to Dublin. I think there was only 4 points in it.
But they've often done it. There's no doubt about the capability. Like, there's no doubt about their players.
But yesterday,
across the leagues, there are players in those. Like, there are players in Chris Deering. There are players who are like will make any team. Like, they are producing at times. Then, like, Kerry made a big run 3 or 4 years ago. Like, they do. It's that to have some degree of consistency to it, I suppose. That's because otherwise it turns into a disparaging conversation. And I don't, and we say things like the so-called weaker. The so-called, it means we must say the weaker teams, because the so-called is, then we'll be saying the so-called and weaker teams.
And on
you go, and no, it's just the same conversation. It's like, how do you get it? Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I don't expect you to solve that problem here now in some respects, but it's like, yeah, should it be maybe a bit more of a commitment on the hurling populations, like there should be a little bit more in our interest than other, like not just the amazingness of Limerick or whatever, you know.
23 and 24 points, I think, were, you know, roughly what the defeats were yesterday. Mm. It's not helping the cause, waking up this morning just, you know, trying to get back into it, and you're going down the road and you still have, I don't know the answer. Like, the team still want to be playing the Kilkennys and the Tipperarys, and you know, everyone wants to play the best, and if you're a player, you want to perform the best. But still, you know, I don't know, it's investment, you know, where the money goes, you know, is the other thing, and who controls it. And I think through the schools has to be, and through the young people, and that's where the thing will come up. But
it's a 15-year plan anyway. It's not a 2-year
it
plan.
It is, but like, this has been spoken about for a long, long time, and we're not getting solutions on it.
Derek, are you still lining out?
I'm not. No.
No. Finished.
Hips are gone.
How's the body with you? It was injuries finished here, really. So.
Yeah. No. Sure. Body's fine. You know, I don't put it under too much stress, being honest.
It's a grand comfortable looking chair you're on.
Enjoying retirement, to put it that way. It's a shame. Obviously, I miss it hugely. Not able for it anymore, unfortunately.
I was down in Ennis actually a few weeks ago with TG Cahir, and I walked by a pub that I remember frequenting with you once upon a time. I think maybe John Conlon and a couple more were there as well.
You were on a surf trip that weekend. Myself and Cormac Lunneman, I think, were with you that thing.
I might have been calling it a surf trip, but I think it was I think it was all roads to Ennis was actually what we were doing. But yeah, look, it's great to see you. Good to see you again, Derek. Thanks very much for coming into us again, James. That was great to sit with you. Best of luck up, and we mightn't see you next Monday, depending on how things go up in Galway. You have a few old friends to see up there, and it'll be you'll be taking your time coming home, and hopefully for Wexford, I'd say we'll be hoping for a Kenny win. I'd say in the possibility that the last game might be a little bit less in it in terms of bite from Kilkenny, but it's not always the way. Championship between Wexford and Kilkenny sometimes it just takes on its own life and that's it. But that's it. Thanks very much to Derek for coming in from the South Clare and James for making his way into the studio. We'll be back next week for another episode of The Hurling Show. We'll see you then.
You're listening to the GAA Hour with Diarmaid Ling on Sports Joe.
Donald Donovan is the left cornerback. He hits it. He hits it. What? It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses. What a match.
There's been a missing person in Clare for 81 long years. Well, today, that person has been found alive and well, and that person's name is Liam McCarthy.
They know as much about serious level sport as I know about the sleeping habits of the Ayatollah.
There's a streaker on the ground now. He must be a Kilkenny man because he's quite happy with the situation right now.